well. Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio. Our featured guest today on this Gold Nugget segment, Mr. John Embry from Sprott Asset Management. John Embry, industry expert in precious metals for over three decades, portfolio management specialist as well. Since the 1960s, he's a senior advisor at Sprott Asset Management and a favorite of this show. Welcome back, sir.
Nice to chat with you again, Chris.
It's nice of you to say, and we have been looking forward to having you back here on the show because there's a lot going on in the markets. The Eurozone troubled by this Grexit. They're going to open the banks, you know, open the doors again, the ATMs will start to flow. That peripheral nation is on the verge of an exit. And a lot of people are concerned that this could have a domino-like effect across several other debt-plagued neighbors. I mean, and that could spill over and even have a global impact.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting conundrum, Greece, because to me it's an insoluble problem. You have a totally bankrupt country, and you have the Eurozone, who basically can't allow them to leave because there's just too much Greek debt and there's all sorts of derivatives written on it. So they keep dancing around and, you know, basically, I don't know what the outcome's going to be, but one of the other things they're deeply afraid of, and you alluded to it, is that if there were a Grexit, then, I mean, the Spaniards and the Portuguese and the Italian populations would start to say, well, how come we're going through all this austerity? And why don't we possibly leave as well? So it's a very destabilizing factor. The end remains to be seen, but I can't see a very positive outcome over time.
You know, if we look at this, step back a minute, gain some perspective. This is, at best case, a partnership. This is a problem between lender and borrower, but it's also, I think, an issue of extending excessive easy money to people who maybe don't have a societal foundation in place that demands the repayment. Differences in cultural backgrounds and whatnot with regard to debt. There's a lot of animosity and ambiguity regarding debt. It just seems to me as though lenders have been a bit unscrupulous. And I think a lot of that is because much of the mainline media is owned by people who have it in their best interest to keep perpetuating this debt cycle that we're all caught up in.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, I have a philosophy, and I've always had it, but it's obviously not shared by the Eurocrats, that if you lend somebody money, it's incumbent upon you to make sure they can pay you back. That's the way I've always approached life. I mean, I'm taking a risk if I lend you money, so I better do the due diligence and make sure you can pay me back. Well, I mean, not only did they sort of lend Greece a whole bunch of money before 2010, when it became apparent at that point they couldn't repay it, they just kept piling more debt on them. There's nobody looks good in this situation. I mean, a lot of the criticism of Greece, they don't work hard enough, they retire too early, their pensions are inflated, nobody pays taxes, etc. I think they're all basically, there's truth in it. But when they lent them the money, they knew that. So, I mean, basically, it's incumbent upon, I think, the Eurozone to come up with some debt settlement that can allow Greece to recover. They can't recover carrying this much debt.
Iceland, I think, is just an important piece of this puzzle here because they faced similar debt disaster there. It would have just taken most of their country underwater, you know, the tiny island. These were unscrupulous debts. We're writing it off. We will not pay you back and will not allow you to destroy us and this nation. And now they've taken the pain and are emerging. I hope that officials see this as a potential blueprint.
It's interesting because, you know, people say, well, Iceland's very small, that you can do it with a country the size of Iceland. There's less than a million people there. But nevertheless, they were the victim of unscrupulous lending. I can't remember. I think it was the Dutch and English banks just poured astounding amounts of debt into that country. And they couldn't handle it. And I think that's the right outcome. But you see, if you want to extend that further, Chris, I think that ultimately, before this is all over, and I think it's going to take some time, there's going to be a major sort of reneging on the debt globally. We've got in roughly $200 trillion worth of debt globally, $60 trillion of which has been created since the global financial crisis. These numbers are outrageous. There's no way on earth we can go forward with that sort of debt burden.
This idea that there's less than a million folks, they're not a major threat. You know, I think we could turn that on its head. This is David and Goliath. They stood up with no military force whatsoever, no political power throughout the Eurozone or worldwide, essentially just a spot on the North Atlantic map. It was the traditional lending practice to press the flesh, shake the hand of those that you are going to be lending money to. The local banker, they knew your background, they knew where you went to school, they knew half the people you grew up with, and they knew your neighbors because they were all clients and patrons of the bank, and they might be in the same synagogues or churches. And this, you know, made for a much more sound lending system. But with the advent of this collateralization, where CDOs, MDOs, mortgage-backed securities are all packaged up, tranched, sliced and diced, and sent around the world via Wall Street, it just eliminates the risk for almost everyone except who it matters to the most. We better get on to our topic du jour, and that's the precious metals. People are concerned about Dr. Yellen and company at the Fed looking for a rate hike in September and another maybe quarter point in December. Two and done. Give us an idea on what you think this could mean for the markets, please.
Number one, they keep talking about rate increases. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they say, but it's going to be data dependent. I happen to be of the mind that the U.S. economy isn't nearly as strong as the authorities would have you believe. I'm a great fan of John Williams of Shadow Stats, among other people. And I mean, there's a lot of evidence that the U.S. economy is flagging here. The last thing they probably need is a rate increase. And I suspect I have a very different view on if they did have a rate increase. I think that might actually be bullish for gold, because I think it would probably put the economy and the financial system at even greater risk. So I'm not concerned about it. I mean, you've had interest rates fall to almost zero, and yet the gold price has fallen from 1900 to 1100. So I don't think it's a problem. And the other thing I'll bring up is that in the late 1970s, when gold had its run to 875, interest rates were going through the roof.
And it took at least 5 or 6 years of rate hikes, culminating in 1980
with the Volcker, when he really squashed the inflationary psychology out of the system and set up, you know, about 30 years of financial asset inflation. But the fact is, I mean, you can't possibly raise rates. This is, you know, this zero-based interest rate thing we're dealing with is the exact result of too much debt in the world. If they want to crush the debt burden, just raise rates to any degree.
Oh, that's right. And one really wonders if this isn't just saber-rattling anyway.
Oh, I believe it is. I believe it's moral suasion to sort of keep sort of a bid in the U.S. dollar.
The ramifications of even marginally higher rates, at least $300 trillion in notional derivatives exposure to interest rates or interest-sensitive exposure in our six leading money center banks here just in the contiguous United States, as well as all throughout the Western world. I mean, the implications are staggering to any type of even relative increase in rates, and plus any type of nascent recovery that we've experienced in the economic output would just be decimated, because you'd see the housing sector implode, which is arguably 60-70%, I think, of the recovery that we've seen. So, I mean, with new housing starts going through the roof, obviously we're putting millions of people back to work. Those jobs would evaporate. Give us an idea just what you see on the horizon. Any topicality that we haven't covered today?
I think we've got to keep a very close eye here on the gold and silver prices. I mean, they're trading at remarkably low levels in comparison to what you can dig them out of the ground for. There is massive open interest on the COMEX and the LBMA, and there's no inventory if anybody ever called these contracts. So I think it's one of these things that they've put enormous pressure on gold overnight. As you know, there was 2.7 billion of paper contracts dropped in about 2 minutes, and then the price dropped $50. I mean, this is leading to a I think a very large bottom, And when gold finally goes the other way, I think it's going to be violent to the upside. So I would encourage your listeners, you know, not to be dismayed by this sort of short-term action, because I think it's unsustainable.
Well, you know, I think it's almost cliche to talk about dollar cost averaging, but in my discussions with Princeton Emeritus Economist Dr. Burton Malkiel, author of Random Walk, over the long term, if you will just get over this natural human tendency to want to outthink the markets, you know, to command the waves, command the tides. If you accept the fact that we just can't most of the time, sure, there's always pockets of probability where one can get a pivot point in the markets and whatnot. Find me on one hand the number of people that you've seen grow rich that way.
I don't have a problem with dollar cost averaging, particularly when you've got an item that's inexpensive. And I mean, when you look at gold and silver today, I would argue that they're probably the most inexpensive assets on the planet, and yet they're the ones under the most downward price pressure. So I think dollar cost averaging at this point into these, because you can't pick bottoms. But I mean, it would be brilliant, because most other assets are not cheap.
We've just seen so much deleveraging over the past few years. I mean, sure, it's been a difficult time. Many people had just bid up, and the momentum just turned the other way into the risk-off trade, as we've seen in U.S. equities. But at some point, you know, that momentum will shift.
Oh, it's going to shift violently. I mean, that's why I say you've got to be very, very careful with the way you're positioned today, because if you're all financial assets and no real assets, I think you could get badly hurt at some point in the not too distant future.
And if that sounds like talking one's book, take a look at China. If we look at the Shanghai Exchange, we watched equities plunge by, I think it was close to peak to trough, just over 30% on the Shanghai Exchange.
Correct. I think they'd still be plunging if the government hadn't put in all these amazing rules, like you can't short sell, and these people have to buy. And it's really quite remarkable the extent to which they went to try to stop this carnage. But the problem is the stocks were hugely overpriced, and there was far too much debt margin buying employed to basically, you know, get the market up like it was. You got to be really careful. I mean, I think the U.S. margin debt's about as high as it's ever been in history, too. So I would be very wary of sort of piling in at this point.
I think it's a great point. And as we wrap up here, I'd just like to note that, you know, I think we forget sometimes, and even in the industry, that, you know, people are chasing return. They have no choice. When governments hold rates artificially low, you know, savers, retirees, widowers require that passive income, are nearly forced into a gambling, speculative state because there just is no return to be found anywhere.
Well, I think that might be part of the strategy of our peerless leaders. And I mean, this financial repression which is going on, it's punished anybody that's done the right thing through the years. They've saved for investment and what have you. And now they're being forced into speculative activity.
I wonder if you could give us an idea about some of the services that our listeners can find at Sprott Asset Management and any other contact information that you'd like to share with the listeners today.
Well, now you can go to our website, sprott.com. And I think that, you know, we're well known for our precious metal expertise, but we're a full service operation. We have, you know, bonds, stocks, and everything else. I would encourage people to take a look at our offerings and go to sprott.com.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot to, to glean and to gain from the website. So we're going to make sure that there's plenty of links available for our listening audience and subscribers. Thank you for your time, and please return to the show.
Chris, it's always a pleasure. I'd be glad to talk to you anytime.